With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the On The Box podcast, the television show podcast on the Anfield Index podcast channel. And this is the Game of Thrones series. It's still going weekly. We're on episode 5 of season 7. Not as fiery as last week, but still some fire in this one. And I've got two brilliant guests again with me. I've got the co-host of the AI Comic Pod, is Mrs. Stu Bridson. How are you doing, Stu? You okay? I nearly made you into Stu.
Stu. Yes, let's not go all American. I'm really good, mate. I've literally just finished watching it minutes ago.
You're going to be raw so, then, which is good.
It's very raw, very fresh in the mind.
Excellent. I've also got Mr. Alternative Facts. I'm sure he'll give us some alternative theories for this episode. It's Mr. Cam Branch. How are you doing, Cam?
Yeah, very good. Thanks. Early start this morning to get that episode in. So yes, literally finished half an hour ago.
I know you've got to go to work quick, so you'll probably leave us early. So if you do, if Cam does go, it'll be me and Stu. So we'll start off, Cam, where the episode ended last week. It kicks off immediately from there. Bronn dragging out Jamie from the water. And he's quite funny, actually, Bronn, because he's like...
Straight away.
You're not going to die. I want my stuff. Yeah.
Basically, that's all it's about, wasn't it? Character, isn't he? Absolute genius, that guy is. So, yeah, I saved you because I'm the only one who can kill you until I get what I want. And what I want is my fucking castle. Not that he said it, but that's what it was all about. So, Bronn is
that's gotta
very
be
Bronn.
The quickest C-bomb that the show has ever had. Because he said it within about 2 minutes of the show starting up. Even I was surprised.
He fucking picks up on all the swear words, like typical.
Oh, yeah, it was one of the first things he said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was
yeah. He didn't mess about, did he?
Listen, you can't.
He never does. That's why everyone loves Bronn.
But yeah, that's what he knew straight away then, Stu.
It was a switch though, Stu, because last week he pretty much gave up on the riches to save his own life, you know, because it was just like, right, fuck it, it's survival mode, and he's straight back into it, isn't he?
That's what he's like. He's the ultimate survivalist. He's a lone wolf. He survived this long by being smart. And when he's talking to Jamie, and they had a great little back and forth. That was only one dragon. If she decides to use them, to really use them, and Bronn jumps in and goes, "You're fucked." Well, don't you mean that we're fucked? No, I do not. So he's not stupid. As soon as he's got whatever he wants, he's gone. That's how he's done as well as he has done. I'm fully expecting him at some point to end up by Daenerys' side, because he will go, "Hang on, she's going to win. I want to win."
I don't even have to ask any questions because he's answered them before I even start. So, Cam, I was going to say, do you see him jumping ship? Because, you know what? We're going to get to Tyrion later. He just let Tyrion in and there you go. I mean, there is history between them, but it just tells you everything about Bronn, doesn't it?
Well, he's a mercenary.
There you go.
Pure and simple.
That's the word.
He's going to go wherever the money is, wherever survival is. It's a war. He's got no loyalty to anybody. The only loyalty he's got is to himself. And if you were in that position, what would you do?
Yeah.
I'd be jumping ship to the lady with three dragons.
Yes, for sure. And you know what? Talking of Tyrion just there, sticking with you actually, Cam, for this one. The next scene is just him walking through that rubble, that aftermath. And he, I don't know if you felt it, but it looked like he felt guilty. You know, that these were his people.
There was a sadness about it.
Yeah.
He was reflecting and he was deep in thought and he was thinking, people have died and I've tried to stop this. This is because I think what it is with Tyrion, he wants to win the war as clean as possible. He doesn't want people to die. He's got a conscience about the people. And that's why he was drawn to Daenerys as well, because ultimately that's what she was about when she first started becoming the queen and becoming a leader and freeing the slaves and everything. So he felt that it really, really got to him. And he doesn't want to see death. And that rolls into what happens in the next scene where...
Yeah. Exactly.
You know, I mean, where Daenerys is straight about bend the knee.
Yeah.
Well, that's the line at the moment, isn't it? Bend the knee.
Of course it is, but Stu, when you see that scene of Drogon on that rock, what a beautiful scene that is. Like, he's just there with her standing in front. Like, that's power, right? That is fucking...
It was. That's exactly what I was going to say. It was, he looked like a ruler, you know, he's sitting high above everyone else, but talk about a way to really convey your power to these troops that you're trying to get to, as Cam has said, you know, the line of the show, bend the fucking knee. Just you in front of this gigantic dragon sitting on this rock. It's a pretty powerful statement. And that's what she's about. But I completely agree with what's just been said. Tyrion wants to do this as cleanly as possible. And walking through his family's men, he may have known some of those people. So it's got to be quite bittersweet for him. On the one hand, his queen has just won a big war, but he's just seen his family's men slaughtered and burnt to a crisp. And I think he's potentially going to jump ship and go the other way, because I think he's getting slight flash forwards to her becoming the Mad Queen. You know, she's been kind up to this point, but she's starting to develop a bit of a nasty streak. And I don't think he's 100% comfortable with it. Like, he was pleading when he's pleading for
Tarly's
lives.
Great line, mate. Great point. Yeah.
Send him to the wall. Put him in chains. He's literally saying, do anything
but kill him.
Kill him. Yeah.
Because that's what Cersei would do. Cersei would put him to death, and she's trying to escalate herself above Cersei. But if anything, she's just done the most cruel thing, because putting him in the dungeons for a couple of weeks, I'm sure they would have leapt at the chance to do that. But I also, I was writing notes and I actually put down dick on more like dickhead.
Yes.
That was just
stupid.
So now House Tarly's pretty much dead.
Yeah.
Well,
so House Tarly's around. Two great houses of Westeros pretty much exterminated in the space of a couple of weeks.
Yeah, massive, massive. And that's exactly what Tyrion was trying to say. We've already lost one, mate. What are you doing? Don't be stupid.
There's not that many. There's not many great houses that established Westeros, and they're just dropping one by one. They could end up with literally three or four of them, yeah, and they'll be split between the two camps.
Yeah, the main three will be left in the end, and you got to think about it. And I mean, the scene where Drogon just absolutely burns through them, It is cruel, isn't it? It's really cruel, but at least it's instant.
The music is brilliant, though. You can tell whenever he's going to breathe fire, they have that really...
That sound effect.
The music goes almost guttural. It's really low and bassy, and you just know. Whenever it happens, I sort of tense up like, oh, someone's getting burned. And visually, it looks incredible. You can see now why they've only done 7 episodes this season. Because the money they're spending on the dragons now is insane.
Well, wait till next week, mate. I've watched the trailer. It's going to fucking blow. We'll talk about it in a sec, but it's at the end of the show, but it's going to blow everyone's mind. Because if you thought tension was last week, next week, I think we're going to be fucking soiling ourselves the whole episode. But anyway, one of the words that we're going to hear every week, I feel, is Dracarys. You know, it's so powerful now. Whenever she says it, whether she says it in anger, whether she says it really quietly, like she did today, she was just like, Dracarys, and that was it.
Very somber.
Very somber. It's just because I don't think she wants to do it herself. I really do not think she wants to, but she has a choice. She's a queen. She wants to be the queen. And she's like, you join me or you don't. And if you don't, I'm sorry, but I'm not letting you go back. There's no way.
I think you're right. She's doing it because she knows she has to. She can't be seen to be weak. If she lets them live, then thousands of others will go, oh, well, I'll just go to the dungeons then. And then she's gone back on her word as being the breaker of chains.
Exactly. And so the big thing was Tyrion in this. Obviously, like you both have said, I totally agree. He was gutted when they died. You know, I mean, the other thing is, what a stubborn bastard Tarly was. You know, what an absolute stubborn shit. His dad, Randall Tarly.
Respect him for it, though, don't you? Because that's what a man should do. But as Tyrion said, your loyalties seem to be quite flexible. You know, he was against Cersei until a couple of weeks ago. Mm. So he, on the one hand, he looks really principled. On the other, he just looks stubborn and stupid. But he tried to save his kid. You know, Dickon could have survived, but he obviously inherited his dad's stubbornness. Yeah, so Sam's the only Tarly.
Yeah, I think Dickon was a bit stupid, to be honest. To be, you know, I mean, you know what? Let's stick with the Tarlys and get this out the way and get Sam's story out the way as well before we move on to Jamie and stuff. Because
don't you just want to punch him in the face?
Do you really?
For not listening to Gilly.
Oh my God! Like the biggest reveal. Oh my God, Cam, did you pick that up? Cam.
She was, you know, they were sat in the bedroom and she was reading books and she's going on about the number of
steps, 15,782, whatever it was.
Yeah, she's reading them out and she says, such and such a maester. She goes, what's an annulment? And he says, it's when a man puts his wife to one side.
Oh, yes.
And she says, this maester, he annulled a marriage for someone called Rhaegar.
So she called him Rhaegar.
Rhaegar. So he's just confirmed that Rhaegar and Lyanna were married, which means Jon isn't a bastard.
He's a Targaryen.
He's a full-blooded Targaryen. And even just saying it now,
that's... And he just stopped her.
I just clicked my fingers. I was just...
And then he just goes on that rant about, oh, who cares about how many shits this guy's had, and he's not... And,
Such a huge scene, like, as in, when that happened, I was like, I was so excited, because you know what? He's not a bastard. That's massive for the whole show. He is now the rightful heir, the elder sibling's son. He is the rightful heir to the Seven Kingdoms. Just think about that for one fucking second. He's the king of the North, but he's actually the real king.
He's not. He's one step below Daenerys.
I know, but it normally goes to the next king's son, doesn't it? That's what I mean. The lines go.
Rhaegar was the older brother, wasn't he?
He was. He
was the older sibling.
Yeah.
Rhaegar was the older sibling, but Daenerys was Rhaegar's sister. So we don't know whether it goes to the next sibling or if it goes to the next.
No.
Well, it goes to Gendry. No. He's the rightful heir for Robert.
No, and think
that's
about
why they're
it
giving
like
it to him rather than Stannis.
Just look at the royal family now. Prince Charles. Who's the next heir? It's not Andrew, is it?
Nope.
Okay, yeah, fair enough.
Yeah,
you're right.
The way monarchy works is that it stays in that the eldest, and what happened here is that's why Robert Baratheon, that's why Stannis wanted to kill all the bastards, remember, and Gendry. Remember, because
a bastard couldn't take the throne.
Yeah,
that's the difference. Gendry
that was
couldn't.
The other thing. But they were going to try and push it, weren't they? That's what they were trying to do. That's what Ned was trying to do, wasn't he?
Well, yeah, plus he had so many, because from the books, there was the Blackfyre Rebellion was one of the old Targaryen kings. He was just a big, massive shagger, and he had kids everywhere, and all these bastards rose up and tried to overthrow the Targaryens, so...
Yeah, very interesting.
Yeah, so that has put the cat amongst the pigeons now, or the dragon amongst the pigeons, whatever, with Jon.
And we're skipping back and forth. We'll come back to the Lannisters in a second, but whilst we're on Jon Snow... Oh my God, Cam, you know what? I actually felt something when he was sniggering at him, he wanted to kill him.
What you felt.
And then he touched him, right? shut up, Stu. But I mean, there was a sense of like becoming a reunion. You know, I felt like Drogon felt something, and I mean, I think that's clear. John felt something. I mean, did you feel that, Cam? I was moved
straight away. You just knew it straight away. And even Daenerys, she's realized something as well. I think she knows that why she is Drogon that way with John. Why is John that way with Drogon? What's happening here? And it's got her thinking as well. There's a play going on here, isn't there? In the, you know, there's a mind thing going on, and it's just, it's fascinating to see. And it's got you thinking now, where is this going? How is it going to evolve? Where, you know, she was quite put out when he said something about, that's not the word I was thinking when she said they were beautiful.
Oh my that God, that was hilarious. Like,
yeah, it was like, that's not quite the word I would use. And then he suddenly, when she looked at him, yeah, he was like, oh crap, scared. What am I like,
oops,
said?
Oops.
I just rephrase this slightly.
I know. That was a great scene, mate. I want to go to Stu with, I know Stu doesn't listen to these pods, right? But you might have listened to last week. I did. But my Star Wars reference is coming true here. They feel something for each other into like Luke and Leia. Right.
Yeah.
But obviously, Uncle Aunt,
you could see when he left, when he was leaving Dragonstone.
But they don't know
she had like a long lingering look at him, and it's hard to say, is it romantic or is it like there's a familiarity between them? Like they know that there's something. But did you notice when John was petting Drogon, he actually purred.
Yes.
He was making like those little squeaky noises that he made when he was a little dragonling when he was with Daenerys, and she must have noticed, and she must have been thinking,
what the
how in the hell is Drogon so comfortable? Because he didn't, even with Tyrion, when he met him in the dungeons that time, when they were in Carth or something, or Marine, even Tyrion got snarled at. Jon didn't get anything. He didn't growl. He barely even showed his teeth. So they must be thinking the only people that are that comfortable with dragons is Targaryens. She must know.
I don't know. I don't think she does. Not clock for her, but definitely you're right. When as soon as he is gnarling at him, like standing in front of him, as soon as he takes his takes his glove off and puts it against his cheek or against his where his mouth is, that is it. Like you
and
said,
his nostrils were going, and I wonder if he can smell Targaryen.
Yeah. And his eyes blinking, like you know, like someone's eyes are watering up. Like he was blinking, and
it was a slow blink, wasn't it?
Oh, it was like a cat or a dog. He was just like so comfortable.
You know more than us on this, yeah, exactly.
Well, yeah, this is what Wilson's like, but Wilson's asleep on me right now. He's my dragon.
he's your Drogon. But that's what I felt as well. I just thought, this is beautiful, and forget it. I'll do predictions later. I just hope.
Visually, it was incredible to see that.
So good. I mean, that's the bit that tells you all 100%. He's a Targaryen, half Targaryen, and that's brilliant to know because something's coming. It's so exciting. You can't wait for the reveal. That's why shows like this are brilliant because they're building on something huge for fucking 7 seasons. There's 2 episodes to go. Something's going to happen. Now, let's jump back to the season.
Shit, there is. There's only 2.
There's only 2 left. 2 more Jesus. Weeks.
And every episode has had a payoff, hasn't it? In some seasons, you get the payoff in about episode 8 or 9.
Yeah.
We've had something rewarding every single episode this season.
Mm-hmm. And just before you came on, me and Cam were talking that this felt like a reset as well. A bit of a, let's like a season opener at some point that, you know, we're going to reset a few things because we've got some big shit coming in the last 2.
because everyone's back on their own sides now, aren't they? John's gone back. Daenerys is back on her own. Jamie's back with Cersei, so everyone's sort of gone back to their starting points, but then John's gone off on another mission. Cersei and Jamie are about to try and start doing something else, so there's been like a little 5-episode arc, and now back to the starting blocks for 2 episodes.
Cam, there's 2 bits to Jamie. I want to just do the first half of the bit where the first scene, his second scene, is when he actually meets Cersei again, and he is distraught because I've not seen him so afraid in the previous 6 seasons as he is right now. After, like, you know, I think Stu mentioned it at the start where he says to Bronn, the 3 dragons, what we're going to do when there's 3. He's saying exactly the same stuff to her, but she's like, fuck that.
Well, she's got Qyburn in her ear whispering all sorts, hasn't she? So, you took the word right out of my mouth there in distraught. He's almost destroyed, let alone distraught. He doesn't see how in any way they can defeat Daenerys now. He's thinking, that was 1 dragon. What are 3 dragons going to do to us? She's got, and he also mentioned the Dothraki army, the way they went through us as if it was sport. It wasn't a war to them. This is just an everyday thing for them. So he's seen 2 beasts of an army, because the dragons are an army in themselves. The Dothraki are an army. He hasn't seen the Unsullied yet, really, has he?
No.
So
wait till they turn up. Fucking
I was just going to mention the Unsullied because they're almost equal to the Dothraki because all they've been bred to do is fight.
Yeah. Exactly. So when they come back, and but obviously Cersei, she's so clever. She's learned so much from her father. She mentioned it in one of the previous episodes. Do you think I've been stood next to him for 20 years and not learned anything? She's got her father's mind, and she is scheming, and she's got something massive lined up.
We'll go to their second meeting in a minute, but just to finish this bit off, Stu, she questions his manhood pretty much. You know, because obviously the big reveal here is that he tells her that Olenna killed Joffrey because she's obviously going mental at Tyrion. We'll come back to Tyrion and Jaime in a bit, but this bit, she says to him at the end, her parting shot to him is, I know what my choice is. A soldier should know his choice too. Fight and die or submit and die. But because he's kind of like not a soldier anymore, he can't fight.
It's hard to see what her motives are there because she's not just emasculating him as a soldier. She's putting him in his place and saying, you know, you are a soldier. It's almost like she's saying, look, what, you know, we're brother and sister. We're also fuck buddies, but you are still a soldier and I am still the queen. If I tell you something, you do it. So she's been a little bit of a bitch, but exactly as Cam said, she's definitely got Tywin's mind, and Tywin was an incredibly clever man. You know, the whole time when he was with the Mad King, he was plotting. The whole time when Robert was on the throne, he's always got 10 plans. He's always got every eventuality thought out, and she definitely seems like she's inherited that. I didn't expect her to know about the meeting with Tyrion, but she's clearly learnt a lot from a lot of people.
We've got to come back to that. It's great. It's a great point, and I've got a theory behind it. But before all that happens, Ser Jorah is back with Daenerys, so that's another reunion. We get so much screen space shared by some of our favourites, or you know, old relationships and stuff. And obviously, Ser Jorah, there's, I mean, you'll know this more than anyone, Stu. There's history between the Starks and the Mormont in terms of Ser Jorah ran, didn't he, from these guys? Because he was doing some slave stuff, and I think Eddard wanted him killed, didn't he? It was something like that.
And I think it was something along those lines. I think they covered it way, way back in the early seasons, but he went into exile. That's why he was where he was. I think his name's a little bit of mud in Westeros, but he's a powerful tool for Cersei to have because he's shown he's a very, very capable fighter.
Oh, Daenerys.
So even though he's only one man, to Daenerys, he's a very capable fighter. He's got a good mind. He's a good strategist. So it's very good for him to be back. But there's some level of love between them. He's madly in love with her. You can tell by the way he looks at her.
Yeah, she's fond of him too. She's fond of him,
but she doesn't feel the same way that he does. No. He sort of...
He bends the knee at every fucking opportunity. He's
loyal to a fault. He really is. And he's a good knight.
He's loyal because he's in love.
Yeah, true. Ooh. He may even be a little bit blinded by that.
Yeah, true. And I think the next scene when they're all together strategizing, obviously Bran has a vision of the bloody fucking whole
army of the dead. That was a very quick but poignant scene because every time we see the army, it's got bigger and bigger. And you just think there aren't enough troops in the whole of Westeros to take them on, even if they do all come together. So how in the hell they beat them? The only way is surely dragons.
I think the only way you can beat the army of the dead is you have to kill them, the Night King. And
maybe.
I believe you kill the Night King because the Night King is the one who raises them all. So surely if you kill him,
it's like the old vampire theory, isn't it? You kill the head vampire and everyone else dies as well.
Yeah, that's how I see it. And the only way you kill him is with the Valyrian steel sword.
Yeah,
it's got to be through the heart.
All the dragons, one of the two. I reckon there's two ways. So, I mean, the really interesting part of this is the whole plot that goes on in this episode is another one of Tyrion's brainwaves because he wants Cersei on side now. and like they want to go together, because obviously John's convinced them now that we've got to go and fight these, or we've got to go. And then basically says, why don't we bring one back first? Tyrion is like, bring one back. So,
well, it's a good plan, because Cersei is stubborn, isn't she?
It's a crazy plan.
It is crazy, but she's stubborn to a fault, and he's right. The only way she will believe it is if she can see it. There's no two ways about it. But it's how the hell they think they're going to be able to transport one all the way to King's Landing.
Because it'll die, right? It needs to be in the winter, doesn't it?
I can't imagine they're going to do well in the warm.
No, exactly. It needs to be frozen. So, anyway, maybe they just bring an ice block with them. But that's going to melt too. But, the brilliant thing was all those people in there. And obviously, just before that, Tyrion and Varys having a chat about she's a bit out of control.
I mean, a pair of old housewives sat around.
What did you think of that, Stu? Because Varys is worried, really worried about her.
I think the fact that Varys and Tyrion are both worried should be cause for concern for Daenerys, because they're two of the most intelligent people in the world. And if they're both thinking that she's maybe a little bit off base, because you had that scene the other week, didn't you, with Varys, where she said, you know, if you think I'm doing anything wrong, don't plot behind me back, come and say it to me face. And I hope there's going to be a scene next week where he goes to her and says, look, I think you're going a little bit awry here, and something's going to go wrong. You need to rein it back and get back to the way you used to be. You know, you need to get back to being kind and considerate and stop being such a mad bitch.
What do you think, Cam? Do you agree with any of that? Or do you think it's just, you know, they have to be like that big, they're just trying to put across what she's just done with the Tarleys?
I think there is the thought process there that she looks like she's becoming mad. But is she becoming mad, or is she really becoming a proper leader? And sometimes a leader has to make harsh decisions, harsh choices, and you have to show as well. You can't just be the softy leader. You've got to show a steel side. Is she just showing a steel side? So are they misreading her? Because they've got all suckered in on this, oh, she's lovely, she's sweet, she's the breaker of chains, you know, the mother of dragons, and she's not going to harm. But you can't win a war without harming. You can't win a war without killing. You have to kill, and you have to show authority, you have to show power. And that's what she's trying to do as well. Because don't forget, if you look back to last week's episode, and she was stood on that beach, and she said, I'm losing this war. Because she's tried that approach, and where has it got her?
And she's had a big win now. So, but what I did see, right, from her in that scene when they're in that room and they're deciding who's going, and Ser Jorah is the first one to put his hand up and go, I'm going, let me serve you. You see dread in her eyes. Like, that's the love. The love was back this week for her in that bit. And, I saw the release. And then when John said he's going, and like, that was like, no. You ain't going, bro. And it's just, and then he goes, I am. I'm the only one who's fought these. And again, her eyes were like, oh, shit. And it was just such a good scene, because she's like, I haven't let you go yet. I've not let you. You're allowed to go. And he goes, who the hell are you? I'm the king. Don't mean any disrespect, but I'm going to go. Are you going to stop me? And like, she just nods at the end, doesn't she? She doesn't actually say bend the knee, none of this shit. She's come around and she just nods. And that's,
well, she's never really made any actual threats against them. Actually, she's implied. Yeah. She sort of said, I could do this. You know, I could, you know, make you stay. But I don't think she ever actually would, because already she's starting to get a huge respect for him. And I think that she must now be thinking, after the Drogon thing, there's clearly more to this guy than meets the eye. I want to keep him on side. I need to keep him on side, because he will be.
She asked about the heart dagger immediately after the Drogon thing, didn't she? And he didn't.
I don't understand why he's not telling her, because that adds even more to his myth, his legend. If she's to say, yeah, I did die. I was stabbed about 18 times and then I was brought back.
When it comes out, it's suspense, though, isn't it? When it does come out for her, she's going to be like, okay, you might just be the true king. Because remember, like we just talked about, he could be the true king. I mean, that is a game. Well, today's a game changer.
He could be the prince who was promised.
Yes.
Because she knows about the prophecy from where she had that vision. So if she's to hear that there's this king who was killed and brought back, and now she thinks he might be a Targaryen as well, because if she realizes that, she'll start thinking, you know, the Song of Ice and Fire, ice being a Stark, fire being a Targaryen, she might actually put two and two together and think, shit, I need to get behind this guy.
Hold on, you just said something there that's clicked. Is this whole fucking story about Jon Snow?
Well, it's theorized that potentially that's what it's about. There's tons of theories about what ice and fire could mean, but with them just confirmed, basically, you know, they've 99% confirmed that Rhaegar and Lyanna were married, and if they were married, then he is a legitimate Targaryen and a Stark. So that is ice and fire to me. It's probably not written about Jon, but that could be where the ultimate inspiration for the name
came You've from. Just made something click for me. That is fucking brilliant. And if that's the case, I can't be happier, to be honest, because I don't want him to die. I really don't want him to die. So, I mean, there were so many little scenes that we've probably missed here, but let's move on to some of the bits and pieces that were happening in this episode. And obviously, the Tyrion, whilst we're talking about Tyrion and Daenerys, she's allowed Davos to smuggle him, because that's what he's good at. He was a smuggler. So, smuggle into. So, Cam, I know you've got to go soon, so tell me a little bit what you thought about these scenes where, you know, Tyrion's gone off to meet Jaime, and so Davos is on his own quest to go and find Gendry, so we're going to talk about Gendry yet. But tell me about the Tyrion and... you talked to me about Tyrion and Jaime, what you thought of that scene.
That was one of the most important scenes in the whole show because of what Tyrion is trying to do. But I thought there was a really funny little line in there where Jaime goes to Tyrion, I vowed to chop you in half if I ever see you again. And Tyrion responded, well, you're going to struggle with that sparring sword, aren't you?
Yeah.
And, and Jaime just sort of thought,
oh, okay.
Oh, fuck. What do I do now? So I can't really do much here. So I thought that was a hilarious little line in there.
It broke the tension, but, didn't it? It really broke
the tension. Yeah, it broke the tension. But by the tension being broken, it relaxed Jaime's mind. And with that, there was a bit of clarity in his mind because the anger that he felt towards Tyrion, even though he saved Tyrion's life, he was still angry with Tyrion in a way, because obviously initially he would have thought, maybe he did kill my son. I'm not sure. Definitely killed my father. Even though I've let him go, because he knew deep down that Tyrion was innocent. He didn't want to believe it, but he knew deep down and that Tyrion said that again, you knew I was innocent.
He 100% knows now. He 100% knows after Elena.
Because Elena confirmed it for him. So he was justified, Tyrion was justified in killing his father because obviously his father was going to kill him. So it was fight or die, Cersei's mantra. So I thought it was a superb little scene. It was very quick. It was very precise. They didn't hang around on it. They just made the point and then moved on. And then the next bit was obviously Flea Bottom and
Gendry.
That was superb again. I'll let Stu do that one.
Yeah, I mean, Stu, let me ask you about the Lannisters first, because you can't undervalue that scene. It's two of the biggest characters back on screen together again. And there's animosity between the brothers, even though last week you saw the other opposite end, the love, because Tyrion doesn't want him to die, but now he's reaching out to him.
It definitely feels like he's trying to save him. He knows as we've said before, Tyrion seems to want to do this with as little bloodshed as possible, and he obviously doesn't want his brother and sister to die because there's not many of them left. But I think he accepts that Cersei is probably a lost cause because she's so stubborn. But there's definitely hope for Jaime. I've said before, I think Jaime's going to jump sides because I think Cersei's going to do something so wicked and so evil that he's just going to push her aside and say, look, I don't even know you anymore. But it's hard to not enjoy whenever Tyrion's on screen, because the way he speaks, the way he connects with everyone that he talks to, and even though Jaime, you know, was ready to try and split him in half, they're able to still find that common ground. If there's obviously some kind of a love between them, they seem to be the only Lannisters that actually really like each other, even though he killed his dad on the toilet with a crossbow, which was still one of the best deaths ever.
Yes, on the shitter.
Yeah.
You know what? The scene that follows this is Jamie going to see her. Now, my theory here is everyone knows Varys had little birds. And when he talks about little birds, it's the little kids. Who took over those little kids, killed the maester? It was Qyburn. Qyburn has eyes.
Of course he did, didn't he?
Yeah, he did. So he's got eyes everywhere. That's what he was telling her. He was filling her in on the meeting just as he was there. She knows everything.
Sneaky shit, Qyburn.
He's so sneaky. Like, if you thought Varys was sneaky, Qyburn is not only sneaky, but fucking talented as well.
He's genuinely evil. I mean, he's got some fucked up ideas, because he was kicked out as a maester, wasn't he? Because he was so interested in reanimation and stuff like that. And he was into all the weird occult stuff. So he's evil and clever, and he's clearly got... He's inherited all these connections.
I'm wondering whether he's been mentioned, like, in with a different name, like his surname or something, or his first name, by, you know, the Archmaester to Sam, and we just haven't picked up on it because he was saying a few had been expelled and shit for trying too much stuff. I'm just wondering whether it was him. I'm not sure.
Maybe. You never know. He might be going by a different name or something because he might have been shamed. Because, maesters are supposed to do...
Good.
They're not supposed to fuck about with bringing people back from the dead.
No, not at all. I mean, she has Jamie by the balls here because he's like a puppet.
By the cunt, as she put it.
Yeah, but he's like a puppet to her. Like, I mean,
she knows how to manipulate him.
Exactly.
She's wearing the trousers, isn't she, in that relationship? Yeah.
Very much.
I don't
very
know if
much.
You both picked up on this, but she said she's pregnant, right? But she may be, she may not, but I don't think she is. I think she's manipulating him because the prophecy was she only would have 3 kids.
And she'd see them all die.
Exactly. Now, either way, the other thinking is if she is pregnant, she's dying within 9 months because she ain't going to see that kid. That's the other theory.
That's not a bad shout.
Yeah.
Or she dies in childbirth.
Well, no, she won't because she's not.
Or she dies during the birth.
No, she's killed by... She's killed by someone, it says. The prophecy was that she's killed by someone. And I think
Maybe Cam's right. Maybe she's killed by a kid. Because it was commonplace in those days to die during childbirth.
But then she does have 4 kids, though. But then she does have 4 kids, no matter what. Whether it was before or after. She still would have had... It's still her child, right?
True.
Yeah.
Still her child, even if she's not there. You know, she dies in childbirth.
So this comes back to your theory that Jamie's going to kill her. When he realizes in a few months he's not actually pregnant.
I think it was Stu and Joe that had the theory that I wanted Arya to kill or someone else. Like, I can't even remember.
I can just see him being the Queen Slayer. I've just got visions of the way they did that flashback with when he was explaining to Brienne. I can see it being exactly the same. They're in the throne room in the Red Keep, and she's giving out some kind of an order. And he just goes, you know what, this is too much. And he just has to run his sword right through the back of her. And it had been like an almost mirror image of when he killed the Mad King.
Wow.
Yeah, that would be amazing. I think we're going to see something like that as well. I'm excited for it. But like I said, I actually think she's being manipulative. She's just trying to get him in. And then, Cam, what did you think of her last sentence to him? That don't betray me,
betray me again. That was, oh my God. It was like, I am the one. She's asserted her authority completely over him. You are not to fuck with me in any way, shape or form now. Anything you do wrong, and you know she will. As much as she loves him, she would kill him.
Oh yeah, and now we
she's
know.
Consumed.
And now he knows that she knows everything.
That's right. She is consumed with power. It's all about the power now. She's totally... If anyone is the Mad Queen, you'd say it was Cersei right now.
Oh, for sure.
I've seen a few people have been saying that. Whenever anyone's been saying, oh, Daenerys is turning into the Mad Queen, a lot of people have been saying, if anything, Daenerys is more often than not, 9 times out of 10, she's been very clinical. She's thinking right. Logically, okay, let's plan it out. How are we going to attack Cersei's really knee-jerk? She's just like, right, let's go and do this. Let's go and do this other thing. Jamie's like, Jamie's the little angel on her shoulder. He's the one that's trying to say to her, look, let's calm it down. Let's plan out what are we going to do? And she's just too instinctive. But as Cam said, she's drunk on power. she's wanted this her whole life. You know, she sort of was in power when she had the kids on the throne. She was controlling Tommen and she was, you know, ruling through him. But now she's legitimately on the throne. She's not giving that up for anyone.
It's funny how there's a parallel between the Lannister brothers. Both are trying to calm queens down. It's so beautiful, you know, it's so good. But, I mean, like you were just saying there about the Mad Queen, it so is her because she used wildfire and destroyed half the city. Come on, man. Why are we even forgetting the climax of last season? She
blowing up the Septon's church or whatever it was. Hell of a scene as well.
Of course it was.
And that was another part of her scheming, you know, because the logistics to get all that sorted out and to get all the barrels in place, that must have taken a long time. So she's always had it in the back of her mind that she was going to do that.
And it was the little birdies that were doing that too, the little kids, remember? So there's those links. But the beautiful thing about that scene, which now I understand more, and this show, if you go and watch it back when it ends, the more you watch it, the more things will click. When Jaime turns up at King's Landing and sees everything on fire, that was the thing he stopped by killing the Mad King. That was the thing he wanted to stop. He wanted to stop him burning people alive because that's the order. And his sister's gone and fucking done it. So that's where, like, Stu's theory of him killing her is I kind of believe it's going to happen because that's what he was trying to do. He was trying to stop madness.
That's a really good, I'd never thought of that before. That's a really, really good shout. That must have been like a bit of a horrible prophecy coming true.
Yeah.
Because Jaime is again about the people more, isn't he?
Yeah. Since Brienne, he's definitely been on a redemption arc. His good side has definitely come to the forefront. And even though he's serving the Queen, he's trying to do as good as he can and trying to do as well as he can. But he's sort of, you know, it's fallen on deaf ears, isn't it? He can't get through to her sometimes as much as he tries.
Yeah, and he came across as cocky when he was at the start because he was a warrior and he was a leader, and that's what they do. But he was always, I think he always felt that I'm the Kingslayer, I'm accepting it, but I actually did it for a good reason. Like
he did. Nobody really other than Brienne realizes that he did the most noble thing. He sacrificed his reputation to save the lives of tens of thousands of people, but all people remember him for is that he killed the king. Nobody understands why.
Why?
Because he won't tell them. If he was to sit down and tell them, they'd probably go, ah, bollocks, he's just trying to save face. But because he had that moment with Brienne when they were in the bath, it was so raw and so honest, and she really saw that this was, you know, he did it for a completely honourable, noble reason, and that's his curse, really. He saved all those lives and nobody will ever thank him for it.
Okay, Stu, just me and you left, mate. So that was a really interesting conversation on the Kingslayer and stuff. But there's shit going down between some other siblings in Winterfell, and it's Sansa and Arya. I mean, give me a bit of a lowdown of what you thought about this. I mean, rather than us just going through the scene and relaying it, let's just talk about what you think. Because Littlefinger's playing a very, very sly game here. And I'll give you my thoughts after I get what you think.
Well, I'm glad that they did this because it was all really touchy-feely, nicey-nicey last week, but Sansa and Arya have never got on. Sansa has always been the little lady in waiting. Arya has always wanted to be one of the boys. She was always more interested in fighting than sewing and archery than, you know, learning how to stand properly and make flowers and all the rest of it. So it was only a matter of time before she was going to call Sansa on her bullshit. And she's pretty much implying outright that she's got everything that she wanted. She's always wanted to be Lady Stark of Winterfell. And now she is, even though it might only be temporary. And I don't think Sansa really likes that because sometimes I don't think she likes having people around her that tell her the uncomfortable truths. She was like that when she was with Joffrey. She was so brainwashed by him that whenever somebody came along and was going, look, Joffrey's an absolute shit, she would always defend him. Sometimes she just seems like she can't handle the truth, even if she knows it's true. And she basically outright said, didn't she, you are thinking about what happens if John comes back. And Sansa's going, how can you even say such a thing? She's like, you're thinking it.
It's true.
Right now. And it's true because you would be. The second John leaves, you would be thinking, well, what am I going to do if he doesn't come back? How am I going to organize things? And it doesn't have to be, you know, evil and nefarious. It's just good planning. You always have to plan ahead, especially when she's got thousands of troops and she's got all the northern lords at her back. If John doesn't come back, she's got to be able to rally them instantly and say, right, this is what we're doing. This is how we're going to go forward. But it's always good having Arya, because this new Arya, with all the insight that she's got and all the new skills and the cunning that she's learned from being with the faceless men, she, like Tyrion, I think we've both said on and off air several times, she's one of the most fascinating characters. She commands every scene that she's in now, even if she's not saying that much. And she's clearly got under Littlefinger's skin as well.
Yeah, I think my thoughts on this the whole Go of this episode. Littlefinger's played them like fiddles here, like so easily, because he knows Arya's got her eye on him. He knows that he's been aware of that since Bran pretty much outed him in front of himself. So he's been worried. You could see that fear last week.
It's a ladder thing.
Exactly. As soon as that, he knew, right, my time here might be numbered. I need to start a little bit of India-Pakistan here and start a bit of a war and dissension in the ranks. You know what I mean? Split, divide and conquer type thing. So basically he has the whole episode, even the bits where those lords are saying to Sansa, we will serve you, we don't want to serve John, and then he's chatting to them afterwards. I actually think he's put them up to going up to Sansa to do that, right? And the whole thing is just to play off Sansa off of Arya, because he knows Arya is so, like, you know, loyal to John. And then he plants that whatever it is, the scroll or the raven message or whatever, he plants it. He is totally planting everything for Arya. And now she's read it. She doesn't know the context, because it's totally out of context. She doesn't know that there's basically a sword to Sansa's throat when she's writing that. She was forced to write that. She was
brainwashed, wasn't she? She was really entrenched in the whole, oh, I'm going to be, you know, I'm going to marry the king.
Her dad just died? Oh, no, yeah. Was it before? No, it was after. Yeah, it was after he died.
I think it was after, because
she's scared.
I think
as well.
You got onto Emergency Awesome, didn't you, with Charlie Schneider?
Wow.
And he covered that in one of his videos in the last couple of weeks, that they can discredit Sansa because Sansa swore fealty to the Lannisters. So if she's Lady of Winterfell, even temporarily, they can say, well, you swore fealty to us. You swore your allegiance to the Lannisters. Well, the Lannisters are still in power, so therefore you're still loyal to us. You're not going to break that, are you? You know, Lady of Winterfell. And they could really play on the fact that she is the little lady in waiting. But like you said, Arya's got no idea, because she doesn't know anything that's happened in the last few years. For all she knows, it's fake. But I assume she's now going to take that and go to Sansa and say, what the fuck are you doing? You actually wanted people. Because I was trying to read the scroll. I paused it for a minute. And you could see she says that somebody has died.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing she'd said that their dad had died. And then the last line was swear fealty to King Joffrey. So she was clearly, I think there were several of them were put out. And she was saying it to all the other lords, maybe just the ones in the north. You need to swear your allegiance to Joffrey. And that could really, really rock the boat between the two of them, when it's already a little bit rocky anyway, because Arya doesn't like what she sees with Sansa. And I dare say Sansa doesn't like what she sees with Arya as well, because you could see when she was watching her fight in Brienne, you know, she was looking at her and she's thinking, what the hell? How can you do that? You were my 11-year-old sister the last time I saw you. You used to run around in the tunnels underneath Winterfell, and now you can fight like that against one of the best knights in the land.
Totally agree. There's a sibling rivalry there, and it doesn't look good for Sansa, because she might just find herself on the list now. Because this girl hates Joffrey. She hated Joffrey. Arya hated him. Absolutely.
And she hates everyone associated with the Lannisters.
Yep.
I mean, Sansa might not like them, but Arya, true, deep down, blood-boiling hatred for them. And if she thinks... I think you're right. I think it could really fuck Sansa's chances up, especially because Arya and Jon always had a very close relationship. And if Arya goes back to Jon and says, look, she did this. You know, she was telling people that Joffrey was everything. she's also got Littlefinger in her ear. I don't think you can trust her. And I think John would listen to Arya more than he'd listen to Sansa, because John's already knows that Sansa's been talking shit. You know, she's publicly talking down. Yeah, she's challenging him in front of his men. And that's not, a king or a queen can't be challenged publicly like that in front of lords and soldiers. No. John needs to be the absolute king in the north. But I did write down in my notes that that could be the beginnings of some kind of crack in the northern troops, because some of them are loyal to John. Some of them, as you said before, that some of them are only loyal to her. It was the Veil, wasn't it?
Yeah, the Veil will be one day.
The Veil only came to Sansa, and that was all down to Littlefinger.
I've got a bit of a prediction. I don't know if you'd agree with me on this one. I actually think that this is the end of Littlefinger. He will die by the end of the next two episodes, because the key for Arya is Bran. Bran's seen this now. As soon as it's happened, he's seen it. He knows it's happened. So the twist will be she's one step ahead of him because of her brother, and he'll come up to her, and they won't show it to us, but when he actually dies, Littlefinger, Bran will be standing nearby going, yeah, I kind of told her, like, you know.
I think you might be right. I don't see him. I don't see how his arc can carry on into the next season, because the next season has got to be the big three-way fight between Jon, well, possibly Jon and Daenerys against Cersei. I don't see how Littlefinger's story carries on in that, because it's too distracting. Next season's going to be all-out war. So I think you're right. I wouldn't be surprised if Arya doesn't kill Littlefinger. Because there's a dozen things that she could kill him for.
Yeah.
All she needs to know is that Littlefinger betrayed their father, and that's it. He's done. She decides you're on the list, she's dead. Now she's got the faceless tactics. She could be anyone. Get up to Littlefinger, slit his throat, and he's done.
Yeah, and I think Bran is the key to everything, the key to the reveal of, you know, Jon Targaryen, everything. That might not even be his name. He might actually have a real Targaryen name.
He did. It was... When they did the reveal in the Tower of Hope?
Yeah.
People have like fucked around with the audio and tweaked it and tried to raise, because you know when Lyanna reaches over and whispers to Ned?
Yeah.
I'm sure it's pretty much accepted now that his name is Jaharis.
Oh, wow.
I think she whispers over and she says his name is Jaharis. So his full name, as we know now, should be Jaharis Targaryen. He's not a Snow.
No, he's not a bastard, which is what I love, because he's been known as the bastard the whole way. I was
thinking about that the other day. It was so sad, that episode, that scene from season one. I think it was episode one, when Ned says to Jon just before he leaves to go to King's Landing, which obviously was where he died.
When
I come back, I'll tell you all about your mother. And it's so sad that Jon's possibly waited all. He's had a lifetime of being called a bastard, of being hated by Catelyn, of being shunned by. I mean, Sansa was always a bit of a dick to him, and it turns out after all this, he's their cousin. You know, he's not their brother. He's just their cousin, and he would have been Catelyn's nephew or something.
It's still better than being a bastard kid, isn't it?
It is, because he's not a highborn, but at least he's a true blood.
Yeah, he's not. They were treating him like as if he was lower than them. He's not. He's the rightful heir.
He's above them, because at the time the Targaryens were in rule.
It's like this is a bit of a role reversal. I've got another little theory before we go to the end, which is probably going to be your favourite bit, because there's so much comic references that we can make to that ending of that show. I actually think the scene with Jon and the dragon is so vital. That there might be something in store, as a shock in store at the end of the season, with them killing off Daenerys, because that's the only way the dragons go on, and that's the only shocking thing. I think the only thing at the end of the season that would fucking make me like probably cry is her dying like that. And I just think they're introducing Jon and the dragons for a reason, you know, for a reason. And I don't know. I'm just throwing things out there that come into my mind, because, like, you know, if you're a fan of this show, things will pop in, and especially when I'm talking to people like yourself, Joey and Joe Simpson, it because you have so much, some of the stuff you say just triggers stuff in my head. So I wish I'd read the books, to be honest, because I'm probably mental right now. But anyway.
So do I. I wish I'd picked up the books years and years ago and got into them, but I'd never heard of them. No. And I really wish I'd got into it because there's so much more detail. I mean, you and I have both started listening to the audio books, and I really want to try and stick with it, however long it takes to get all the extra knowledge, because I hear what Joey and Joe are like.
I think you're quite nerded out, though, aren't you? I think you're quite nerded out on it by reading what's on the net and stuff, so I think you're quite well-versed anyway.
I read a lot of theories, and I watch a lot of Emergency Awesome. I can't praise him highly enough, Charlie. He does so many videos that give so much info.
Yes.
And then I'll go and read, like, the Game of Thrones Wikipedia and read all the articles to try and get as much of the knowledge, because the more you know with Game of Thrones, the more enjoyable it is, because there's so many Easter eggs littered around every episode. It might just be one word that opens up a whole, 100-year chapter of Targaryen rule or something like that.
You're damn right. We're going there right now, mate, because when they all meet at Eastwatch, and, I mean, the best bit is, I mean, we didn't even talk about Gendry. You know what? Let's do that first. Gendry kicking some ass. How good was that with the hammer? Thor-like?
The best bit about that might have been missed from some people is that was Robert Baratheon's weapon of choice, was a warhammer.
Oh, really?
That's how he killed Rhaegar Targaryen at there's some kind of a battle that they had, and Rhaegar's armor was littered with rubies, and Robert crushed his chest with his warhammer, and the rubies were scattered all over this marsh. I think it's called like the Ruby Marsh or the Red Marsh or something. And then I think he stoved his head in. So there's a nice little, he doesn't use a sword, he doesn't use an axe, but he's comfortable with this gigantic fucking 100-pound hammer.
How good was Davos in that scene, mate, when he kind of bribes?
He's a shit knight. He can't fight to save his life, but he's got that silver tongue. And that's why him and Tyrion are so good together.
Yeah.
Because they could both charm, they could make they could sell ice to an Eskimo, couldn't they? When he's talking to those knights, and then he brings them over to the boat, and he's got the crab meat. It's seamlessly brilliant. I love him. I worry that he's going to be one of the ones that dies.
Yeah, because he's going to turn, something's going to happen, and there's no real use for him.
Skill.
Yeah.
His use is all strategy and planning and talking. But when it comes down to it, when, bodies are falling, I think he might be one of the first ones to get dropped. And that would be a big shock for John, because he's been one of John's closest allies.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, now, see, you just said something and something triggered in my mind. When Gendry and John first meet, he goes, I mean, that's brilliant as well, because he's totally ignores what Davos's advice. Yeah, I'm son of Robert Baratheon, the bastard son. And then he goes, oh, really? Because you're a bit lean, and he goes, you're a bit short. And I was like, fucking hell, they're just slapping each other down.
John's got a little smirk, but his logic was right. Our fathers trusted each other. Why shouldn't we?
Hold on, mate. You just made a point. You killed my father. Fuck me. Imagine when he finds out.
Yeah.
That's another thing to think.
Yeah, your father killed my father.
Ouch.
Yeah, okay.
You just said, you just told me that, as soon as you said Robert killed Rhaegar, I just thought, holy shit, Gendry and Jon just met.
When you had that scene where Bran was watching young Ned and young Lyanna, that's why Lyanna was left alone in the tower, because because Rhaegar had to go to fight the battle. So in terms of the timeline, that happened quite close after. So Jon was born, or Jaharis was born, whatever. And then not long after, his dad was killed by Robert, by Gendry's dad. So it's nice. But as it stands right now, you can see Gendry's logic. Who better plight of a bastard than another bastard?
Yeah.
And he is. He's going to be useful, but his other use. Do you remember when Ned finds him in the blacksmiths, and he's made that incredible helmet?
Yeah.
He could still offer something for John's troops, because he was a brilliant blacksmith. So he could do something like that.
Well, the whole dragonglass that they're taking over to Winterfell to start make, or whatever, he can help out big time, make some amazing weapons.
He can be smithing that. Definitely.
You're right. Now, when they go down, obviously at Eastwatch, Who's there? So we've got, let's go through the list, okay?
You've got Barrick Dondarrion.
Yep.
Thoros of Mir. and the Hound. And then they're being met by Gendry, Jon, Tormund, Giant's Bane.
Yeah, and Sejora.
And Sejora. So you've got a whole host of people that have probably never been in the same room at the same time.
Never.
But they all know each other in bits.
Now, go through some of the history here, because I wonder whether you know this bit. The Siege of Pyke. Have you heard of that?
Any bells.
So basically, the Siege of Pyke has been mentioned 3 or 4 times in the 7 seasons. So I understand why some of you might not remember it, but Jaime Lannister mentioned it and said, "I'll never forget Thoros of Myr and his blazing sword." Ser Jorah said it to, I think, Daenerys. I'm not sure, but he said it to someone in one of the seasons. "I'll never forget Thoros of Myr and his, you know, his fire sword." Basically, next week, people, you are going to witness something in history. They never forget him because he was amazing in that war, that Siege of Pyke. They all fought together. They never forget him because he's that fucking spectacular. Next week, it's coming back. That sword, the fiery sword, I don't know what the name is. We can go and we'll search it up, Stu, for next week. But it's back. I've seen the trailer. It's so exciting. There is some shit going down. But, I mean, he knew Beric Dondarrion as well, as Ser Jorah did. The Hound and Jon Snow have met before. Tormund and Ser Jorah, they were like, "Your dad fucking, you know, wanted to kill us all." And he was like, I'm sure you wanted to, you know, you did the same back, surely?
Yeah.
And then Gendry... Well, yeah,
there was obviously, that's harking back to the really, really horrible days between the Wildlings and the rest of the North.
Yeah, and the Night's
Watch.
But
Tormund's great. I was hoping there was going to be more, because with the name of the episode being Eastwatch...
I know, it's just the ending.
That's where Tormund was going, and the last thing he'd said really was, "I guess we're the Night's Watch now," and he was pissing off all the rest of the Northerners. Because I love Tormund. He's so good when he's on screen, and he's such a dick.
But he's winds so funny. Everyone. He made you laugh in this episode as well. He goes, "Oh, we bought loads of men. What about the big lady?" What was it? What did he say? What did he call her?
I didn't even catch that.
Yeah, he goes, "Did you bring the big lady?"
There's going to be a moment when all the dust settles when him and Brienne have a big, massive kiss.
I know. I mean,
they'll be like the new power couple in Westeros.
Can you remind me of the history between Gendry and the brothers? Because obviously, Gendry wasn't very happy at meeting them again. They sold him, didn't they?
They sold him to Melisandre.
Yeah.
Because she got into their heads. Because obviously Thoros is... If I remember rightly, it was Thoros was talking to Melisandre and she sort of got in his head saying, well, like, this is what the Lord of Light wants. This is what he commands. And because Thoros is in Beric Dondarrion's ear, he convinced him and then they sold him over. And then, you know, she was trying to fucking... She wanted his blood because she believed at the time that he could have, I think she thought that he could have been the prince that was promised because he had a king's blood in him, didn't he? Because he had Robert's blood. But she's even admitted herself, I think it was last week or the week before, she's admitted that she got the prophecy way wrong. And that's why she doesn't want to be anywhere near Jon Snow, because she knows that she's got things so wrong. But other than that, I don't really know if there's any book based stuff.
No. It was all within the show I was talking about. You know, there's basically what they've tried to do here is they try to show you that there's fucking serious amount of history between these 7 men. And
there's a lot of connections between them.
Yeah.
And it's also good just to jump back when...
So Davos.
Davos said, I wondered if you were still rowing.
Yeah.
Going jokes about how fucking long has Gendry been rowing for?
Yeah, it's so brilliant.
Was it season 3 or 4 that he was sent away?
Yeah, he's been gone for
years. It's been a long, long time.
And remember, this is, again, one of those problems with the show, I think, is that time is just flying by. People are getting to different places so fast and back, and, like, there's no... I mean, I suppose they're rushing stuff, but do you get what I mean? I mean, the only thing
it's all over the place, because all of a sudden... John's leaving Dragonstone, and then he's back up. Now. He's back at the wall, and
yeah.
I mean that didn't. I'm sure they've said it takes weeks.
It does. It's massive
to make that trip, because you've got to travel by sea, and then you've got to travel by land, and you're going across all the ice and the snow, and that's it's obviously getting even more wintry up there because winter's in. So but like you said, I think they've got to rush it, because if they spent
dates
all this
time... Dates would have been
good,
though, you know? If they did anything like dates from the start, it would have been good, because you'd be able to see how old they are, how far it's gone, because surely Gendry's been gone for 20 years or something. I don't know, 15 years, 10 years, maybe something like that, something stupid. I don't know. He's been gone for ages.
It's got to be a couple of years. It must be at least a couple of years with all the things that have happened in between. Because otherwise, it's like a bad soap opera where every week something big happens.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I'm saying it's a massive leap, because look at Bran. Bran's aged. Like, you know, I mean, I know he's aged in real life, but I think that's what they're trying to show, that he was gone for so long as well.
Yeah.
But anyway.
And Arya as well. When Arya left, Arya was
a kid, little bab. She's a bab.
And now, well, I think in the book she was, I don't even know, because everyone's a little bit older. Like in the books, I think John was meant to be, was John 11 and Daenerys was 14?
Yeah.
But they've put sort of, you know, 7-8 years on all of them. Because otherwise it would just be impossible. And they obviously couldn't do all the stuff with Daenerys that they did.
Exactly. She can't have just done that in 2 years. That's taken her years and years and years, you know, of collecting these people, I think. Because the travelling, if you look at the map, just travelling on foot, it's a long journey, man. And the amount of time she's taken to kill other people. And
all the places she's gone, and then everywhere she's gone to, she's stayed for at least a few months to solidify and consolidate what she's got and then move on again. You're probably right. It sounds like she's been out on her own, you know, gathering troops and people for years before she's traveled back.
Yeah. It's an amazing journey to get to where they are. But in the end, there's 7 of these guys. They're walking out. And, you know, I said, oh, here come the Avengers of the Justice League, but it's more like a fucking Suicide Squad, isn't it?
It is a little bit, yeah.
They're fucked. They are absolutely fucked. I mean, I'm interested because look who's on his team. He's got, there's Jon Snow, Tormund, Ser Jorah, Gendry, who's like Robert Baratheon. That's just amazing. The Hound is like one of the best fighters. Forest of Mere. Like, wow, I go after what I've just spoke about. And then I don't know much about Dondarrion. That's the only person that.
But there's a great little bit about him in the books. I think, do you know what happens with Lady Stoneheart?
No, don't, go on.
Very quickly, they've already said they're not doing this in the book. But when Catelyn Stark dies, her body's dumped in the river. And she washes up downstream about 3 days later. And she gets found by the Brotherhood, the Brothers Without Banners. And Thoros of Myr, using his connection to the Red God, brings her back to life. But Barrick Dondarrion sacrifices his life to do it. So Barrick actually dies so that Catelyn can come back. But because she's been dead for a little while, she comes back and her skin's grey. She's got bright red eyes, but she can't speak because they cut her throat so deep when they slit her throat at the Red Wedding. And she comes back and she's on this bloodlust mission to get revenge. So it's a shame they're not doing that. But in the books, that is how he actually dies. And that's the one he doesn't come back from.
Yeah, you're right. It is him. And he's the priest. Soros is a priest, but he does have the flaming sword. I've just read on Game of Thrones Wikia, he fought for King Robert Baratheon in the Greyjoy Rebellion. He was the first man, followed closely by Ser Jorah Mormont, through the breach during the Siege of Pyke, stabbed and terrifying the Ironborn with his flaming sword.
Right, okay, so that's Thoros's.
Yeah, that's okay. Thoros's, yeah.
Well, he's known as the Lightning Lord. So he was a lord of
Spite and Darien, this is. So yeah, initially sent out by Eddard Stark to lead a party of men to apprehend Ser Gregor Clegane. So look at the link between the Hound and him. But obviously he hates his brother, doesn't he? So for the atrocities that he committed against the people of the Riverlands. So I mean, that's mental. So he's the leader of the Brotherhood Without Banners. That's what he is.
Yeah.
So that makes more sense now. Because I always get confused between the two of them, you know, watching it. So I suppose we've given the listener a little bit, if they're as confused as us, maybe not. Maybe I'm just a bit thick. But yeah, that bunch really do confuse me. But I think, Stu, we've done everything. I mean, I've had a watch of the trailer. You give me some, what do you think predictions-wise next week? Because it's been built up to being, it's 71 minutes long. So it's the longest in history.
Oh, bloody hell, that is long.
I think. And then the finale is 81 minutes long. So the next two, it's basically 2.5 episodes. So
you'd think the next two episodes are going to pan out like one giant feature-length episode, just split in half. But without having seen the trailer, which I'll watch soon, the only prediction I'm hoping that you'd imagine there's going to be some kind of a scene where they actually try and get hold of one of the White Walkers or one of the, not the White Walkers, the other ones. One of the little minion ones, I don't know.
Yeah, they just call them a white, don't they? They just want to capture a white. White, is what they say.
That's the one I'm thinking of. There's whites and there's the White Walkers. I really want them to do the payoff where Bran starts telling people things, where he tells Arya, oh yeah, Lord Baelish was involved in Father's capture and kill, and John isn't our brother. Just that line of just John isn't our brother, or, you know, John isn't a Snow, or John isn't a Stark. I need that payoff before we go into the final one, because that's the whole point of this season for me. They've got to build up that John is a Targaryen. So then next season we go into it and everyone knows. Because think about it as well, if word gets back to Cersei that there's another Targaryen, that threatens her even more, because if...
He's half Stark and he's King of the North. Oh my God.
Well, yeah, he's half Stark, but he's a true blood Targaryen.
Mm.
Surely, if Daenerys finds out that Jon is a Targaryen, that's got to be the end of all their differences. And they say, right, well, we come together because now, you know, we are as one. We're related. We're like cousins or something, or I think she's his auntie. So...
yeah, that should end. You're right. I just want it to... I want it to be pure trust, like you said. And
then there's no more bend the knee, because then it's not a case of, you know, it's like him you and bend her.
The knee. No, she bends the fucking knee.
It's them together. They can take it as a Targaryen pairing.
Oh,
and
it's so
then
exciting.
Cersei's really, really fucked. Because one Targaryen with three dragons is bad enough. But two, plus all the strategists that they've got... plus the Unsullied, plus the Dothraki, game over.
I mean, is there any... I mean, I know you said to me the other day when we were talking in WhatsApp, there are other shows that you love and stuff that get you emotionally invested, but is there any other show which has the theories, like the depth of characters is this, that really, like, it's got so much depth, Stu.
I can't think of anything.
You would drown in it, in the depth.
I think about it quite often, that the legacy of the show when it's finished will be... the number of people who don't like fantasy who love this show. The number of people who'd never read like a Terry Pratchett book.
Nope, me.
Or would never read Lord of the Rings.
Nope.
But watch this show religiously and then rewatch it in between seasons and read about it online. George R. R. Martin's mind is beyond, you know, it's beyond imagination to me. To write a story is hard enough. To write a trilogy of stories or a legacy of stories like this.
With this depth.
But it's the depth that he goes into. He writes about events that happened thousands of years before the story that he's telling you right now, and he doesn't need to. No. You know, the fact that they write now prequel books to explain the things that happened before the Game of Thrones books, that's how in depth it is. It just blows my mind, and that's why I want to read all the books or listen to them on audiobook, because I want to soak up every last grain of information.
Yeah,
because it just... fascinates me.
And not only that they've got so much content in this, like we've said, and they've dropped so many little Easter eggs that they can go and create prequel shows.
It's already in talks
they've got like five different ones, but obviously only ones, probably one or two will happen. But how amazing, that's what you just said, the depth is unbelievable. I've never seen anything like it, which is why it's so exciting. Like, my wife was contemplating, she's only just caught up 3 weeks ago, like she watched it within 2 weeks, all six seasons, and she's up to date now. But she was contemplating waking up at 2 a.m. to watch that. She's so excited. That's how excited she is. Like, someone who's never watched it is just like, bang, I can't wait. Next week, I think what we're in for, people, from my point of view, is some real heart racing. Get ready. When you watch this, make sure you relax to start. Not been doing any heavy lifting, nothing, because I have a feeling if we thought, you know, Hard Home, you were scared for John's life. If you thought last week you were scared for Jaime Lannister's life, I think next week we have some really, really favourite characters going in to an all-out suicide mission, and they're going to be attacked. So, it's going to be really interesting, but I think tense. And there's nothing better than that, though, is there? A tense episode of Game of Thrones.
Oh, they do it better than most, and we're up to that point now. Second to last episode is normally where they do a big build up. and then you get the crescendo in the last episode, normally, and then they leave you with some kind of a cliffhanger.
Normally someone dies in this in the penultimate episode, don't they? So next week is a huge one, yeah. I think.
It's quite common for them to do a big battle. The big battles normally happen in a 10-episode season. It normally happens in episode 9.
Yeah, and this is the 6th or 7th. So, you know what? Usually, me and you, probably the most creative minds, or at least the ones that wander the most. If you were a betting man, who's your bet on to die next episode?
Maybe Sir Davos. Because I wonder if, thinking outside the box, Davos has done so much for Jon. He's introduced him to Daenerys. He's helped him amass his troops. He's now brought Gendry in, and Gendry could be the final piece of the puzzle. He could sort of go off, and then it's like he's done his job. And he was saying before, there was a couple of lines he used where he felt like no one was listening to him.
Yeah.
He said, don't listen to me. I've just lived a long, fulfilling life or something like that.
Yeah, well, he's experienced.
Maybe that might be their way of killing him off, because he's sort of been bragging about the fact that he's lived so long, despite the fact that he's not really that useful to a lot of people.
That would hurt, but I don't think it'd be impact. I mean, it would hurt, but it wouldn't be as impactful as, say, I want a death to be enjoyable for once, not like where you get hurt. I want them to kill off Littlefinger next episode. I really want Arya to be the one to start and end the season with deaths, you know, with her list, because that's how she started it. She's done nothing of that since. But I really want her to be on the way out, just saying, right, that's another one chapter, you know, done. And Bran being really heavily involved in telling the story. And then, you know, that payoff kind of Bran telling Arya the truth about maybe Jon as well, and that's how it all kicks off, really, because I don't think he seems really awkward to speak to, doesn't he, at the moment? So
yeah, I loved the I think it was Joe Simpson's last week when he likened him to Dr. Manhattan.
Yeah,
that was amazing. Absolutely brilliant when he's transcended humanity, because he sees every moment that ever happens or has ever happened, so he can't relate on a human level to your bullshit human problems. You know, my problems are everyone's problems. I can't think about this one thing. So he's become such a detached little dick, but he now holds all of this information. He can destroy everyone all at once, because he knows everyone's secrets. He can bring everyone down in one swoop.
I was thinking about this. Like, if someone says, "Why should we believe you?" You know, to him, you know, like in the court where they stand and Sansa was, and they were saying, you know, we want to pledge fealty to you, like as in Sansa, not Jon. In that moment, if he says something in front of everyone and they say, "Well, why should we believe you?" He could just take them down with dark secrets. Well, you shag someone and you're, you know, this and that, and you've got 10 bastard children. Do you want me to go on? And they'll just bend the knee. They'll be like, no.
Easily. All he's got to say is, "Well, do you remember that conversation you had with such and such a body the other week when you told him this?" And they'll go, okay, yeah. Oh, yeah, Jon Snow, he's my one true king.
I love it. I just love it. It's just so powerful, like you're saying. That's not bullshit. That Bran, being the cripple of the show, is the most powerful person right now, I feel, to just tie everything up. So let's see what happens. I mean, we've gone on for a long time. I've really enjoyed this episode because we've been able to talk about just tying some things together, and some stuff Stu's been saying has just really just got stuff out of my mind out, and I just love that. I love that when that happens on a show. Thanks a lot to Cam Branch as well for giving us this time early in the morning. We started at 7:30 today to get this done. We'll try and release it by lunch. So those that have got up early and watched this show have some content, because this show is doing absolutely nuts on the site, which is why I'm doing it so early every week. Stu, thank you so much, man. You got up really early as well, and you were really excited to do this. It wasn't an episode like last week. I know you were desperate to be on that one, but I
was worried about this week. I thought that this week could have felt really flat.
How do you follow a battle scene
like that? But it was brilliant. They sort of slowed it down a little bit, but they've put so many building blocks in place for the next two episodes that, and you still got the payoff. You know, Jon meeting Drogon.
So good.
That's the whole episode just summed up for me. That one scene, and that's all you need. Because I think in the past it very often gets criticized for the pacing, but this season has been faultless. Yeah, every episode has been exactly how it needed to be.
Well, some critics have called it the best episode so far. So, you know what? Sometimes it doesn't need to have all the CGI to make it the best one, sometimes there was so much info. You could tell by listening to this show how much info there was, because we're going off on these stupid, crazy theories. They might be stupid, they might be right, who knows, but that's what happens when there's so much info thrown at you and so many characters being put together in different, that have so much lineage between them and history between them, that you want to talk about it. Now, I mean, yeah. The last thing, I mean,
these episodes are more important as well. That you can't have the battles if you don't have all this stuff that comes before it, and you can't get away from having these personal episodes because the cast is so big. There's so many characters. You can't just all of a sudden throw them into a battle without knowing why they're there. Like if Littlefinger does die next week, the payoff will be so sweet because of everything else that's happened over the last 6-7 years, all the shit that he's done, all the conniving little moves he's made. And when he gets it, it'll be like Joffrey. Everyone will be going, ha, you prick.
Yeah, it'll be one of those deaths that's amazing. I mean, like you said, I think things will kick off now, and we've been waiting for a real big battle, and I think it's coming next. Well, I think it's the mini one next week, because it's just, I mean, the other theory I had watching that episode with Jon and Drogon, and I think Drogon immediately has now some kind of affinity with Jon, and I think that Jon's going to be in trouble next week. Or they all are, and all of a sudden Drogon just rides in.
Oh, that would be incredible.
Yeah, because he's just
remember
like,
when Drogon came and saved Daenerys when there was that assassination attempt when she was in the amphitheater?
Exactly. He feels something.
It was the Sons of the Harpy, wasn't it? And he just came down and saved her. That would be unbelievable.
They just showed that she just looked in her mind, or she just stopped and, like, I don't know whether she called him or she was just scared for her life, and then he was there.
So, I think it was that. I think that the dragons have got some kind of a connection to Targaryens, and I think they knew that she was in trouble. And if they showed up for Jon, then that's it. That's me.
I'm gonna have
to take time off work because I'll be dead.
There's no way, right? They survive next week. There's no way 7 people and a few other people that they've taken with them survive where they're going.
Someone's dying. Someone's definitely
exactly.
dying.
And also, they've got to get out somehow. How? And it's got to be Drogon. It's got to be. I mean, that I'm convinced, but I'll be disappointed now next week. But I know it. But because I've never been right. I'm always wrong, Stu.
Oh, but trust me, nobody makes more predictions about things than me, and I'm very rarely right. But when you are right, it's even sweeter because you're the only one that saw it coming.
Boom. Let's hope. Well, that's it. Now I'm going to say thank you to you finally. Thanks so much, mate, for coming on and doing this early. I think
this is
probably my most enjoyable one. Even the last week, people have said it was the best one. This was the most enjoyable one for me because just so much history, so much learning. Let's see what happens. And hopefully you're back. Let's see what we can do next week. If the schedule suits you, we'll get you back on. And I think next week's going to be... I might need a bumper one. You know, like we did at Anfield with quite a lot of people. I might need to do a bumper one next week because it might just be the one that deserves it.
Okay.
Okay, so winter is here. They're right in the midst of it. Will they survive? We're going to find out next week on the Box Podcast Game of Thrones series. See you.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.